Welcome. The topic today is how grant-making agencies in the public sector can build their capacity to be more evidence and outcome-focused, and to help their grantees do the same thing. Our focus today is the approach used by the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation in New York City, which, although not a public agency, offers lessons for grant-making agencies in government. A hallmark of the foundation's approach is a focus on evidence. It chooses and structures its investments largely on the basis of empirical evidence that a grantee or potential grantee will help economically disadvantaged young people. And a major objective of the foundation's investments is to help grantees build their own evidence base. To learn more, we're joined by Kelly Fitzsimmons, who is the foundation's vice president and chief program and strategy officer. She's with us by phone from New York City. Kelly, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
So Kelly, for agencies at the federal, state, or local levels that do want to build this capacity to be more outcome and evidence focused, your foundation provides an example and is a role model in many respects of how to do this. Tell us more about how this focus developed within the foundation.
Sure. Let me just start by sharing a little bit of history, and really over, you know, the past 12, 13 years shift that the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation took in its strategy to focus its grant making to provide larger amounts of growth capital to fewer organizations so that in turn those organizations could focus on building their capacity, growing, and building their evidence base. And we really saw this strategy as one that would help to drive more impact for children and families in communities. Part of that effort really requires not only funding, but supporting the development of evidence at different stages. So where we started 13 years ago and where we are today has certainly evolved, but the underlying importance of focusing on the building of evidence and supporting organizations at various stages in the building of that evidence has held true.
I'd like to ask you next about reducing the fear among grantees or potential grantees of rigorous evaluation. The fear among nonprofits, in other words, that building a learning strategy and doing rigorous evaluation will show that either their program doesn't work or it doesn't work as well as they had hoped. You've noted that building a sense of partnership with grantees is important for reducing that fear, but also the key role of nonprofit leadership in reducing fear among their own staffs. Start with the latter point, if you would, about the role of nonprofit leadership.
I think first and foremost, the leadership voice that is advancing evaluation or evidence building is absolutely critical. And I would point to examples of leaders of nonprofit organizations who have taken on evidence building, not because they're afraid that they're going to find out, you know, negative information that might cost them in the marketplace. They're actually more afraid they're not doing the right thing by kids or families who badly need the right thing done for them. Or they're very hungry innovators, and they want the data and information to know that their innovation is superior as compared to others, and there's no way to know that you've beaten the incumbent without the type of data and information that evaluation can bring. So I would say the leadership voice really helps ameliorate or shift that fear or put it in the right context in the first place.
And tell us about the relationship building with grantees and how you create incentives on the front end and the back end for building and using evidence.
Well, I think the key is that we really partner with our grantees to develop investment objectives on the front end when we make a new grant. And we will award that grant initially. Grant amounts will vary with larger amounts flowing to those organizations with greater evidence. So on the front end, you could say that the incentives exist with regard to the grant amount and the size of the grant amount. As the investment experience unfolds and we come to the end of investment and assess where we are against those objectives, we'll consider investment renewal at larger amounts of capital based on performance and based on future evidence building and growth plans, particularly when those renewals are accompanied by capital aggregation and we're bringing other funders into the mix who are also partnering. I think that creates a shared alignment and a shared incentive to advance evidence building and growth to the next level.
Before we get into the three levels on which you judge a program's evidence of effectiveness, I want to kind of skip ahead to the bigger picture of why this is important. Tell us why you think that this approach, using that framework, having a focus on evidence, has been important and successful for the foundation.
It is a fair question. I think we are confident in our path based on the results that grantees have delivered with the funding we have been able to provide to them. When we have successes like Nurse Family Partnership or Youth Villages, Harlem Children's Zone, that further compels the grant-making approach. And we've learned about how we need to adjust our funding approach to be more supportive to earlier stage organizations. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. And, you know, we've certainly had to evolve the grant-making approach to be more sensitive to where organizations are at various stages. And I think that's a fair lesson for all funders. And I think that's very much, you know, the zeitgeist that is reflected in the I3 competition, for example.
And I3, to remind our listeners, is the Investing in Innovation program at the Department of Education. And there's more information about that in the overview video on tiered evidence grants that's on the blog. Kelly, I want to ask you next about the framework that your foundation developed that characterizes a program's evidence of effectiveness on one of three levels. It's a continuum that starts with high apparent effectiveness at the low end and moves to demonstrated effectiveness and then proven effectiveness. Tell us about each of those levels, because I think it would be useful for other organizations, agencies in government, as they think about how to characterize different levels of evidence among their potential grantees or grantees. And I should mention this framework is on your website, and I'll post a link to the blog. So start us off with the lower end, the minimum level of evidence that you're looking for.
The basic layer, the sort of tier one of evidence that we look for when we make grants might be in early stage organizations or might be in organizations that have been around a while. They're maybe coming to the evidence building piece just later in their lifespan. And we think about those organizations as, you know, with a terminology high apparent, where internal capability exists, internal performance management, use of surveys, use of other tools, you know, have been in play or demonstrated, and it's evident that organizations have a real commitment to measuring progress, assessing themselves, learning, implementing change based on, you know, those types of measurement. I think the good news is it's really not rocket science at the first tier level. It's really more a matter of leadership, mindset, will, and of course then resources to support, you know, some of the systems and tools that we've mentioned.
And tell us next about the middle tier, which you call demonstrated effectiveness.
The next tiers of evidence really speak to organizations that take that work to the next level and will secure formal third-party evaluation. And I think are holding themselves accountable at the right time in their organization's history for really trying to drive an understanding and external assessment of the impact that they're making. And for many reasons, some of which may be financial, some of which may be capacity, some of which may be kind of lifespan in growth, some may be methodological or, you know, other challenges, organizations may opt for using different assessment methodologies that maybe fall short of the most rigorous assessment, which in our mind is randomized control trial. So we might see comparative studies, implementation studies taking place in this middle tier. We might see other tools that speak to a growing base of evidence and that would give you confidence and give you more information, but not quite hit that highest tier, which would be a randomized control trial or sometimes its equivalent, which might be a quasi-experimental study if a randomized control trial was not merited for a set of reasons.
And finally, tell us about the top tier, which is proven effectiveness.
Well, the top tier really, you know, whether it's proven or it's that it's the top tier, really is that space occupied by, you know, organizations that have undertaken randomized control trials, have, you know, plans for more, because it's not just the case that one RCT, you know, it's one and done. And these organizations are, that would occupy the top tier, are more likely to have undergone multiple randomized control trials, to have gathered scientific evidence of their impact in multiple locations or at multiple points in time over their life trajectory. They will frequently have solid cost-benefit information, and I think an important point here is that, you know, we really look at cost-benefit analysis as being grounded in scientifically valid studies. We would really look for that RCT-level evidence before a cost-benefit analysis is conducted. And these organizations generally have, you know, multi-year evaluation plans in place and are continuously and rigorously improving their program implementation for the benefit of children and families.
Finally, Kelly, tell us about the resources that are needed to have the kind of evidence-focused approach that the foundation has. In other words, what extra skills and capacity is required?
That is a great question. This work definitely requires a variation in skill set, I would say, from what we might think of as more typical grant making. And the importance of bringing in evaluation methodologists who have expertise in understanding best practices in evaluation when they are reviewing applications or assessing evaluation studies is absolutely critical. But having that skill set also balanced very keenly with an understanding of organizational effort, nonprofit, leadership, other contextual challenges is critically important. You know, after conducting a search many years ago for a more conventional kind of director of evaluation, really settled for a different approach where we partnered with other firms, including MDRC, and built different capacity inside that could help steward resources to help our grantees, as opposed to necessarily providing it directly, so that we could play more of that coordinating role to ensure that mindsets were blended and expertise was flexible and right-sized for the matter at hand. And we make use of an evaluation advisory committee, and we're very fortunate to have a terrific group of professionals. That group is chaired by Bob Granger. They meet quarterly like a board, and they help hold us accountable for our objectives. They function in many ways like a review committee for the evaluations that we're assessing, and help, and I think they serve as a check and balance on the judgment that we're ultimately rendering on the evaluation results and findings with our grantees.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but the conversation is going to continue. I'm going to ask Kelly to describe the foundation's Propel Next pilot program, which is helping nonprofits with apparent effectiveness, that first tier of evidence, to better collect and analyze data. And I'm also going to ask her about the shift that she's seen among many nonprofits in terms of having an outcome and an impact focus. And I'll post her answers to the blog. But for now, Kelly Fitzsimmons from the Edna McConnell Clark Foundation. Kelly, thanks so much for being with us.
Andy, thank you. And I would also just like to share a note of appreciation for many partners in the work and folks at different federal agencies, other funders, folks like Results for America. We just deeply appreciate the effort and talent that is going into figuring out how to do this work well on behalf of disadvantaged families across the country.